This is Audible.
Melvin, Evil with a Capital E. Written by J.C. Halsey. Narrated by J. Scott Bennett. Thanks to Hollywood, the things we believe or not believe are set by the things we witness in the movies, the way a bullet enters a man's body, for instance. One instance that comes to mind is the movie Shane, starring Alan Ladd, and of course Jack Palance as the bad guy. The scene in the saloon when Jack Palance's character shoots Elisha Cook Jr.'s character, the poor sodbuster was pushed through the saloon door and out into the middle of the street from the impact of the bullet. There are many other examples I could quote about the same thing happening. Then there's the other side of the coin, so to speak, where the man gets shot with 6 slugs from the same type gun that Jack Palance used, and the man stumbles, grabs his chest, and collapses. This is, in my humble opinion, what is called fiction. Keep this in mind as you read this story. It is fiction. The year 1875, Dakota Territory. Melvin Reasoner was born a healthy 8-pound, 6-ounce baby boy into a family of religious fundamentalists. What happened to Melvin to cause him to turn to a life of crime and become one of the most vicious killers in the Dakota Territories? He had a normal upbringing, if you could call living under the strict rules of a group of fundamentalists normal. Early on in his life, he began rebelling against all the rules. He spent many hours sitting alone, supposedly to repent. He was lucky in one respect. The fundamentalists didn't believe in corporal punishment. He was never spanked or paddled. Sometimes he wished his parents had used the rod on him. In his way of thinking, it would have been a lot easier than having to sit alone for hours, supposedly to think about your transgressions, was the term his parents put on it. When he turned 17, he saddled the one old plow horse they used to cultivate the fields and rode away from his childhood home. He never once looked back. He had no money or provisions. The only things he had were the clothes he was wearing. He had no idea where he was going. He only knew he had to get away. He traveled through the night until right before dawn, when he came to a small farmhouse. It was still dark, so there was no one up yet. He stopped his mount and climbed down. He hesitated, looking around, then walked to the door, turned the knob, and entered the house. He had just closed the door behind him when he heard a metallic clicking sound. Someone struck a match and lit a lamp sitting on the table in the middle of the room.
"What you doing in my house?"
a man with a double-barrel shotgun asked gruffly.
"I was just looking for something to eat,"
Melvin said, with his hands in the air.
"Ain't you never heard of knocking on a man's door?"
The old man lowered the shotgun.
"You can get yourself dead just walking in on a man. If you're just after something to eat and set yourself down, I'll get you a little something to tide you over."
He set the shotgun aside and turned away toward the stove. Melvin reached and picked up the weapon that the man had propped against the wall. He held it level with his waist, cocked one of the hammers, and pulled one of the triggers, shooting the man in the back. The slug entered the man's body almost in the center of his back, cutting it almost in half. The power from the projectile pushed the man forward, causing him to land on top of the stove, spilling a pot of beans simmering there, before sliding to the side onto the dirt floor. The blood started seeping into the dirt floor immediately. Melvin turned quickly to a sound on his left side. A woman in a nightgown stepped through the door, took one look at the dead man, and proceeded to scream.
"Shut up, woman!"
yelled Melvin.
"I don't like that screaming!"
She either didn't hear him, or else she was in so much shock she couldn't stop. Melvin turned slightly, the shotgun in the same position, pulled back the other hammer, and squeezed the trigger. The impact of the bullet slammed the woman's body back through the doorway from where she had just come.
"I told you to stop your screaming," he said calmly. "You should have listened."
He laid the shotgun on the table beside the lamp, then turned in a circle, surveying the room. He spotted what he was looking for in a small cupboard across the room. He had almost reached his destination when, out of the corner of his eye, he thought he saw some movement. He stopped immediately and turned toward the sound just in time to see a door was slightly open, then closed quietly. He went back to the table and picked up the shotgun, looking around the room for shells. He opened the few drawers by the stove and dry sink, but didn't find any. He decided to take the chance that whoever was in there wouldn't know the gun was empty. "All right," he said loudly. "Whoever's in that room better come on out, or I'm going to unload both barrels of this shotgun through the door." He waited. Nothing happened. Nobody was coming out. "Now what am I going to do? If I go through that door unarmed, they could have a pistol just waiting to see me and blow a hole plumb through me." "I'm going to count to three," he said. "You better come on out if you want to stay alive." Melvin watched as the doorknob turned and the door opened about an inch. "You're doing real good," he said. "Now, open the door and step through. And remember, I got you covered, so your hands better be empty." When the door opened, Melvin had the surprise of his life. There was a girl, looked to be a teenager, walked through the open door. She was looking at Melvin. Then she glanced at the bodies of her ma and pa. She made a fist and hurriedly put it to her mouth. She made little whimpering sounds and sobs. Melvin looked her up and down carefully. She was wearing a thin nightgown, and in his opinion, she was very good-looking. Long blonde hair done into a pigtail, olive-colored skin, and the clearest blue eyes now glistened with tears. Yes, indeed, she is a looker, all right. "What's your name, girl?" he asked gruffly. She didn't answer. She just stood there with her fist in her mouth, her body shaking and making little mewing sounds like a baby kitten. "I asked you what your name was," Melvin asked again, this time banging the shotgun barrel on the table. That noise must have done something, because she lowered her fist and turned her head, looking directly at him with a hatred that if it had been a weapon it would have killed him in his tracks. "My name is Imogene Cooper. Those two people lying on the floor were my ma and pa," indicating the dead bodies. "They were wonderful folks and didn't deserve to be shot down by a vicious, cold-blooded killer like you." Melvin stood listening to the girl, flabbergasted that she would talk that way with a double-barrel shotgun pointed at her. "If you're going to kill me, too," she pleaded, "I wish you would just do it. I'm having a hard time thinking about how it's going to feel to die." "You don't feel nothing. One minute you feel something, then you don't feel nothing," Melvin explained. "That's what I've been told." "Then do it," she said, looking into his eyes. What she saw there really scared her. His eyes had no feeling, no life, nothing. They were empty, a dead man's eyes. "Where does your pa keep shells for this shotgun?"
"They're in his and ma's bedroom, in the bottom of the armoire," she told him, pointing to the room opposite from hers.
"You show me, now!" He raised his voice. She walked across the room, her body giving an involuntary shiver as she stepped around the bodies of her folks. Melvin followed closely behind her.
"Right over there."
She pointed to a large armoire on the right side of the bed.
"There, in the bottom, in a small box."
She hugged herself, trying desperately but not succeeding at calming her shivers. Melvin walked over to the furniture and opened the doors. There on the bottom was a small box. He reached down, picked it up, and tossed it on the bed. He laid the shotgun beside it and opened the lid on the little box. He stood up straight and uttered a couple of curse words, the first he had ever let past his lips to be heard. Inside the box, on top of the half dozen shotgun shells, was money. Lots of money. Bills and coins alike. How much he couldn't begin to guess, but it was a sizable sum. That he could tell. He was almost giddy with excitement. He glanced up from his excitement and saw the girl was gone.
Damn, where did she go?
He reached into the box and grabbed a couple of shells, broke open the shotgun, removing the spent ones and inserting fresh ones into the barrel. He snapped it shut, shoved a couple extra shells in his shirt pocket, and rushed from the room. The front door had just slammed as he entered the main room. He considered shooting through the closed door. More than likely he would hit her before she got too far away from it.
I would rather catch her alive. I think me and her should get better acquainted.
He rushed through the door and saw her almost to the barn off to the side. The sun was all the way above the horizon, casting a bright yellow glow on all the building and the land around them. Melvin cradled the shotgun in the crook of his arm and walked slowly toward the barn. He was almost to the building when the doors flung open and a big black stallion came rushing through, almost running him down. When he got himself settled, he saw that the girl was aboard that horse. There was no way his old plow horse would ever catch them.
I'll see her again. I feel in my bones. Let's go see what I can scrounge up to eat.
He headed back to the house.
Maybe I need to get those bodies out of here. They are a little distracting, not to mention messy.
He grabbed the man by his feet and dragged him through the front door and off to the left of the building. He went back inside and did the same thing with the woman's body. He went to the barn, located a shovel, and went back to the house. He stopped just outside the door where the woman had planted some flowers. He pushed the shovel into the flower bed and carried dirt into the house and sprinkled it over the blood. He did this until the blood couldn't be seen. He walked to the door and tossed the shovel outside. He then proceeded to search the room for something to eat. He found some jars of vegetables under a counter. He grabbed a couple and took them over to the table, setting them down. He spotted a pot hanging on a nail off to the side of the stove. He grabbed it and emptied the jars into the pot. Set it on the stove, noticing it was cool to the touch. He moved the pot to the side, opened the lid, and shoved some wood from the floor into the interior of the stove. He spotted some paper beside the wood. He picked it up, lit it with a match from beside the lamp, and then tossed it inside with the wood. Luckily, it caught instantly. He shoved the pot back on top of the burner. He picked the coffee pot off the floor where it had been thrown along with the pot of beans when the man fell across the stove. He looked inside. There weren't any grounds in it. He started rummaging again for coffee. There it was on a small shelf located behind the stove. He grabbed it. Thankful it had already been ground. He measured out 2 heaping spoons of grounds and put them in the pot. He added 2 1/2 dippers of water to that and put it behind the other pot. The vegetables were beginning to give off an aroma that only made Melvin realize how long it had been since he had eaten. He grabbed the pot and almost dropped it. It was so hot. He picked up a towel by the dry sink, grabbed the pot again, and set it on the table. He used the same spoon he had added coffee and proceeded to eat from the pot. He would dip out a spoonful, blow on it, and shove it in his mouth.
That is good. Is that coffee ready?
He stood, picking up a cup from one of the shelves, and using the towel, he poured himself a cupful.
Now, that is good.
He leaned back in the chair, belched loudly, and rubbed his stomach. He set the chair down hard when he heard hoofbeats in the yard. He grabbed the shotgun and rushed to the window, pulling the curtain aside. It looked like there were at least 5 men riding up and dismounting. The sun glinted on one man's chest, telling him it was the law.
I'm going to need more than this here shotgun to have any chance at all.
He started searching in earnest, looking for a 6-gun or a rifle. He couldn't find anything in the front room. Went into the room where he found the shells for the shotgun. He searched the armoire, ripping everything out and tossing it aside. There on the bottom was another small box. He opened it, and inside were both .44 and .45 caliber cartridges.
Great. Now where are the guns that go with these bullets?
He started to leave the room, but tripped over some of the clothes he had thrown from the armoire and fell face down on the floor. He raised his head, rubbing his chin where it had hit the floor. He turned his head, and there under the bed were 2 pistols and a Henry rifle. He reached under and pulled all three of the weapons out. He quickly loaded the pistols first, then the Henry carbine. Now he felt like he at least could take some of those outside with him, if it came to that.
"Hello! You in the house!" someone yelled. "This is Sheriff Stringalt. We've got you surrounded. You need to come on out so we can talk about this situation you've gotten yourself into. Come on out. I know you don't want to hurt nobody."
Melvin didn't have to think very hard or very long on what he was going to do. He was not going to be hanged. He had witnessed many of those in his short years here on this earth. He strapped the .45s around his waist, picked up the Henry, walked into the front room, crouched down beside the only window in the room. He slowly pushed the curtain aside. "Look at that. Them idiots ain't even behind cover. I can easier pick off at least three of them before they realize I'm shooting at them." Melvin was an excellent shot, having been taught at an early age to shoot game to provide meat for the table. He seldom, if ever, missed what he shot at. He slowly raised the Henry to his shoulder and cocked it. He reached up and ripped the curtain from the window, at the same time pushing the barrel through the glass, scattering it in all directions. He sighted, and pulling the trigger, then swung the rifle to the next man firing, and immediately at a third man before the others rushed to take cover. He surveyed his handiwork before he ducked under the window. The lawmen had underestimated this individual. The three men laying on the ground, Sheriff Stringalt, Deputy Sheriff Glenn Hostetler, and newly appointed Deputy Virgil Mendelson. The sheriff and Hostetler were shot between the eyes and died instantly. The third man, because he was moving, had been shot in the left side of the chest. With the sheriff and the main deputy dead, the two men that were left jumped up, ran to their horses, and vaulted into the saddle and were off at a gallop. Melvin reloaded the Henry and stood up. He found a gunny sack under the dry sink and began rummaging around, filling it with items that he might need. He was moving out of here. "Sure wish that gal hadn't run off with that stallion. I could use a good horse right now." He hoisted the sack of goods over his shoulder and walked outside. "Son of a gun, look there. Three horses with saddles on them just waiting for me. Talk about good luck." The sheriff and his deputies had tied their horses to the corral fence when they had arrived. All Melvin had to do was pick the one he wanted. "Why settle for only one? I can always use the others for trading. As far as that goes, I probably should check these hombres' pockets for anything of value and go back in the house and get that box of money in there." He searched the pockets of all three men. One of them wasn't dead. He was still breathing, but just barely. He was trying to speak, red bubbles coming from his mouth instead of words. He tried to raise his hand, but didn't have the strength. Melvin, after searching the man's pockets, stood and looked down into the dying man's eyes. He watched as the light faded and they became unseeing. He pulled the gun belts from all three men and placed them in the saddlebags of all three horses. Each of the horses had one of those new repeater rifles in the boot. He had heard they were very good weapons, but he preferred a .44 caliber Henry. He would take these new rifles along with the horses for trading. He picked out a blue roan for the one he would claim for his own. The other two were fine animals, one a walker, the other a palomino. He looked at all three horses and then turned to where he had tied his old plow horse. He walked over to the plow horse, removed its bridle, slapped it on the rump, and said, "Go on back home. You done good getting me here, but your services ain't needed no more." He watched as the horse trotted out of sight. He went back in the house and grabbed the box with all the money in it. "Might as well check for anything else I might need, since I got enough animals to carry it. I'm going to be needing some clothes. How big was that sodbuster? Maybe his clothes will fit me." He went back in the bedroom and began picking clothes off the floor where he had tossed them. He held a shirt up against him for measurement. They looked like they'd work. "Now, where are some pants?" He found a pair of dungarees and held them up to see if they would fit.
They looked like they would, so he went through all the clothes and found 3 pairs of pants and 4 long johns. He located another burlap bag and stuffed the clothes in it. He shoved the money box in with the clothes. He was ready to move out. To where? He had no idea. But he knew he had to leave this part of the country before they got another posse together to come after him. He tied 2 of the 4 bags onto the horse he was going to ride. If somehow he and the other horses got separated, he would always have some of his goods. He tied the remaining bags on one of the other horses. He scanned the complete area before turning, placing his foot in the stirrup, pulling himself into the saddle. He mounted up, grabbed the reins of the other horses, and headed west. It didn't really matter to him which direction he went, just as long as it was away from his past life. He had had enough of that holy, roly, religious mumbo-jumbo to last a lifetime. What was it about that lifestyle he disliked so much? He couldn't put his finger on any one thing. He just didn't like it, and that was that. The sun was beginning to disappear behind the horizon. What with all the excitement and goings-on, he had completely forgot about eating. Now that he was in the saddle, the hunger bug was gnawing the insides of his gut. "Well, I do have plenty of goods in these bags, thanks to the clodhopper back yonder. First good place I see, I'll stop and eat something." He rode another 30 minutes when he spotted a small grove of trees not too far ahead. He spurred the horse a little to hurry and get there. When he reached the spot, he stopped and scanned the area. It was a fine place to camp. There was even a small stream meandering beside a line of trees. Plenty of green grass for the animals. Plenty of dry sticks and limbs to build a fire. "I'll set up camp and stay the night." Hell, he was beginning to like the sound of saying those unforbidden words out loud instead of keeping them bottled up inside the way he had been doing. On his many trips to town to pick up supplies or to get a horseshoe repaired, he had heard many words from all the cowboys there. He ran them through his head over and over, liking the way they felt in his mind. "I might stay longer than one night," he said aloud. He led the horses over to the small stream and dropped the reins. He watched as all 3 horses lowered their heads and started slurping the water. "That looks pretty good." As he fell to his knees, then onto his stomach, he scooped up a double handful of the clear liquid and placed it to his lips. He drank all that was in his hands and said, "What the hell?" He lowered his face into the clear, cool water and drank deeply. Again, while his face was still in the water, he scooped up some and doused his head with it. "Boy, that felt good." As he raised up, shaking his wet head like a dog, he stood and started gathering sticks and small branches for a fire. First, he made a sort of fire pit with some rocks. Then he started laying the twigs and limbs in a tripod formation. When he had it stacked to his satisfaction, he pushed dried leaves and grass in under the tent-looking wood. He struck a match, and the leaves and grass started blazing almost immediately. When the fire was started, he walked over to the horses and loosened their cinches. He didn't bother to hobble the animals because he didn't think they would wander far from all this green grass. He removed the 2 sacks from the horse he was riding and carried it back to the fire. He rummaged through one of the sacks and removed a coffee pot and coffee grounds. He stuck a couple of bigger sticks in the fire, took the coffee pot to the stream and filled it almost to the top. He carried it back, setting it on a flat rock next to the flames. He dumped what he felt was 2 to 3 spoons of grounds into the pot. He then set it closer to the flames. He searched some more in the sack and came out with a skillet and a slab of bacon. He pulled his jackknife out of his pocket and sliced off 4 thick slices from the slab. He placed them in the skillet and set it as close to the flames as he could. It wasn't long till the aroma of bacon frying made his stomach growl even more. "Just a little longer," he told himself. He speared the slices of bacon with his jackknife, turning them over to brown on both sides. He reached in the sack a 3rd time, and this time he pulled out a 10 cup and plate. The bacon was looking to be about ready. He untied his bandana and used it to grab the hot coffee pot. He poured a cup almost to the top, set the pot down, and placed the cup to his lips. He puckered his lips and blew on the hot liquid, then carefully took a small sip. That hits the spot. He blew some more, taking a bigger swig this time. He set the cup aside, using the same bandana. He grabbed the handle of the skillet, removing it from the fire. He set it on the same flat rock that held his cup. He pushed the fried slices of bacon around in the skillet, helping them to cool faster. Finally, he couldn't wait any longer. He reached in and picked one up, tossing it from one hand to the other, until it cooled enough to put in his mouth. He let it lay in his mouth for a minute, savoring the taste. Finally, he chewed and swallowed it, immediately reaching for another. He followed the second piece with a big slug of coffee. It might not seem like much of a meal, but he felt it was the most delicious thing he'd ever eaten. He finished that cup of coffee, stood, and walked to the horses, removing the bedroll tied behind the saddle. He unrolled it next to the fire, placed some bigger limbs in the fire, then lay down on the bedroll, closed his eyes, and fell asleep immediately. He slept soundly, as if he had not a care in the world. The thought of killing that farmer and his wife weren't on his mind at all. What was bothering him, yet not enough to bother his slumber, was the fact that the girl got away. What was her name? Yeah, I remember now. Imogen Cooper. I need to lock that in my brain so I don't forget. I plan on running into her again someday. Then I'll finish what I started with her. He woke up around midnight by the way the moon was positioned in the night sky. He poured the last cup of coffee from the pot and slugged it down along with the last piece of bacon. He was feeling a little drowsy after that small meal. Might as well get back to sleep. Ain't got no place in particular to be. He stretched out on the bedroll and was asleep quickly. He didn't dream, just as the majority of his nights were. He just wasn't built like anybody else. He woke late the next morning, sat up, stretching his arms, trying to work out the kinks from sleeping on the ground. He stood, went behind the bushes, and took care of business. Came back and started the fire. He got it going pretty good, then carried the coffee pot to the stream and filled it. He brought it back to the fire and proceeded to do everything he did last night, except this time he dug a can of beans from the sack. He poured the ingredients into the skillet and sliced a few slices from the bacon slab. Damn, I should have fried the bacon before I put the beans in. He grabbed the other sack and searched for another pan. He found a small pan and used it to fry the bacon while the beans were heating. The coffee was ready and he needed a cup real bad. He looked over where he had left the horses and noticed there were only two animals standing there. Damn, he swore. I should have hobbled them. I reckon I shouldn't worry too much, though, since they didn't cost nothing. The one he had ridden, the sheriff's horse, was one that was still here. The missing horse was the one with the other two sacks of goods, in which one of them held the box with the money. He wiped the pot and the skillet out with dirt, then pushed him back into the sack. He swished the coffee pot around, then poured the last of the black liquid in the cup, careful not to get any grounds in it. He turned the pot upside down, shaking the grounds onto the fire. He drained the cup and placed both items in the sack with the other things. He carried the sacks over and tied them along with the bedroll, which he had rolled up earlier, behind the saddle. He gathered the canteens from both animals and filled them in the stream. He carried them back, looping their strap across the saddle horn. He turned from the horses, looking again, and felt good about having found such a great campsite. He tightened the cinches on both horses, climbed into the saddle, reached and grabbed the reins of the extra horse. When he was settled and ready to move out, he noticed the fire had caught and was burning again. He kicked the horse in the ribs, and they pulled away from the campsite. Melvin had no more concern about leaving a fire burning than he would have about spitting into the wind. It didn't enter his mind that hundreds, maybe even thousands of acres, could catch fire and destroy a complete forest which had taken years to grow. He just didn't care. It wasn't his concern. Since he had gotten a late start, the sun was already beating down on him, causing him to scrunch up his shoulders, trying to scratch the tickle from the sweat running between his shoulder blades. He reached for a canteen, twisting the lid off and turning it up for a long swig. He wiped his mouth with his sleeve, replaced the lid, and hung the strap back around the saddle horn. The warm sun and the swaying of the saddle caused him to become drowsy. He found himself falling asleep more than once. One of these times he must have drifted off because he heard a voice. He jerked upright in the saddle and was staring at an old man and a mule. The man was dusty and dirty. The mule, almost as dusty, was loaded down with what Melvin couldn't tell because it was covered with canvas.
"Hey, you're lucky, young feller," said the old man.
"How am I lucky?" asked Melvin.
"Hey, you're lucky you didn't fall off that animal and break your neck. I noticed from way back there how you was weaving a back and forth, and if I didn't holler, you was going to wind up face down in the dirt. I figure you owe me."
"How come you figure I owe you?" placing his hand on the handle of his coat.
"If I hadn't woke you up when I did, you could have fell and broke your neck."
"What you got on the mule?" asked Melvin, trying to change the subject.
"It's a secret, and only my friends deserve to know what's under that tarp," the old man said loudly.
"You a prospector, are you?" asked Melvin.
"Yes, sirree," the old man said proudly. "I done found me the mother lode. I'm on my way now to have it assayed. I'd been there already if I hadn't stopped to save your life."
"Old-timer, I thank you kindly for, as you put it, saving my life, but I don't figure I owe you nothing. I figure it the other way around."
"What you mean, the other way around?" he asked.
"Well," Melvin began, "I'm young and ain't got no money. You're old and telling me you got a lot of gold. I don't figure you're going to live long enough to spend all your wealth, so you should let me have some of it."
"Why, you're plumb loco. I ain't going to give you none of my gold. I spent years and years searching for, and I sure as hell ain't going to give none of it to some snot-nosed whippersnapper that's still wet behind the ears."
"I'm real sorry to hear that," as he pulled his pistol and shot the old man in the face. The man's body flew back from the impact of the bullet, bouncing off the side of the mule, sliding down onto the dusty ground. "I tried to tell you, you probably wouldn't live long enough to spend all your money. Should have listened to me." Melvin holstered his weapon and climbed down off the horse. Dropping the reins, he stepped around the dead body and the red stain in the dirt. He pulled the tie-down rope on the mule and flipped it over his back. He stepped back, looking at his newly earned rewards. Nothing but prospecting gear, cooking utensils, bedroll, and other stuff. Maybe it's on the other side. He walked to the other side, pulling the tarp all the way off, letting it settle on the ground. Nothing but more of the same, except for four bags. He grabbed one, noticing how heavy it was. Surely this is part of the old man's mother load. He untied one of the bags and lifted it to the ground. He had a good feeling that he was rich and wouldn't have to worry about having money, not never again. He untied the string, pulled the top of the bag open, and looked inside. "What the hell?" he exclaimed. "Nothing but rocks!" He dumped the sack, only to find more of the same. He quickly did the same to the other three bags. "That old fool must have spent too long in the sun. This ain't gold. It ain't nothing but rocks." Melvin didn't understand about gold and how it's sometimes embedded in the rock. Again, he had taken a man's life. At least the first time he got something out of it. He got grub and horses. This time all he got was a bunch of rocks. "Oh, well," he said to himself, "that old man probably wouldn't have lived much longer anyhow. Probably done him a favor." He gathered a few things he thought would be useful, stuck them in another bag from the mule, loaded it on the extra horse, mounted up and started to leave. He sat in the saddle, then turned and looked at the mule standing beside his dead owner. "That mule might be worth something, and all those things on his back. I'll take him along with me." The mule was a little ornery and didn't want to leave his master.
Melvin tied his reins to the saddle horn and proceeded to drag the stubborn mule behind the horses, leaving the empty sacks and the useless rocks laying on the ground. Pretty soon the mule gave up on fighting against it and started following along. Melvin was feeling good today. Maybe the old man didn't have any gold, but he had garnered a good-looking mule with a lot of good stuff on its back. Maybe he could find a prospector and sell him the whole shooting match. He continued along at a leisurely pace, not really thinking about anything in particular, when he started humming a song. This went on for a couple of minutes until he realized what he was humming. It was a song he had learned in the fundamentalist movement he had grown up in. He immediately stopped, spit off to the side, and uttered a curse. "Whatever it takes, I'm going to clean my mind to anything and everything about my past." As he looked ahead on the horizon, he spotted a stagecoach traveling pretty fast. At the rate it was traveling, he would meet up with it in only a few minutes. He thought, "I have to do something to get some money, since the old-timer's gold was a fluke. That stage should be carrying some money." He rode his horse and the other animals off the main road and stopped behind some bushes out of sight. He tied the extra horse and the mule to a tree limb and rode back to the edge of the road. As the stagecoach drew closer, Melvin reached and grabbed the shotgun he had brought from the farmer's house. He figured a shotgun would convince anyone that he meant business when he talked. The stage was almost upon him. He rode out in the middle of the road, holding up the shotgun and waving his hands for the stage to stop. He noticed the driver raise his whip in the air and popped it above the team. If Melvin hadn't moved out of the way, he would have been run down. He sat there on the side of the road watching the stage disappear in a cloud of dust. "So," Melvin exclaimed, "I need to hone my stagecoach robbing a little bit." He rode back and retrieved the horse and mule and proceeded on the way he had been traveling. To a normal person, that little incident would have been very disappointing, but not to Melvin, because Melvin wasn't normal. Somewhere, sometime, something had happened that changed him from a normal everyday teenager into whatever he was today. He had no feelings for anyone or anything. Sometimes he didn't even feel any certain way about himself. He just lived life one minute at a time, not planning ahead. Acting on the spur of the moment with whatever action that was required to bring it to an end. And if by bringing any situation to an end meant losing his life in the process, then so be it. Melvin rode on down the road with nary a care in the world. He knew he must be close to town after his little run-in with the stage. "Maybe I can do some trading there. I sure hope so. I'd like to buy a few things." He reached town a short time later and rode directly to the livery stable to see if he could sell the extra horse and maybe even the mule. The hostler, a thin man, looked to be in his early 20s, was standing at the door of the stable. "Howdy, stranger. You got some extra animals there. You looking to trade or sell 'em?" the young man asked. He was dressed in worn overalls and faded long johns. He wasn't wearing a hat, and his golden blonde hair was hanging to his shoulders. "I'm willing to dicker about a price for this horse." He nodded toward the extra horse and this mule. "Including all the stuff on his back. Is the owner around?" Melvin looked around as if he was searching for the owner. "I'd like to deal directly with him." "I hate to disappoint you, but you're looking at the owner," exclaimed the young man. "Name's Toby McGuire. Took ownership when my pa died about 6 months ago. That is, me and the bank." "You're mighty young to be owner of a business, ain't you?" inquired Melvin. "I reckon I'm a mite young, but death don't make no distinction about age when it comes along. Pa's dead, I'm alive, and that makes this stable mine, don't matter if I like it or not." "You saying you don't like owning a business?" Melvin asked, surprised. "Like I said, don't matter whether I like it or not, it's mine," he replied, his head hanging in a defeated manner. "What would you do if you had a choice?" Melvin asked the young man. "You want to know the truth?" He looked around to make sure they were the only ones in the vicinity. "I'd like to rob a bank. There, I've said it.
I finally said it out loud. Sure feels good to get it off my chest. Of course, it ain't never going to happen. I reckon I'll be right here taking care of other folks' animals and mucking out stalls till I'm old and gray and die just like my pa. He kicked the dirt, causing a little dust to rise up.
Which bank you figure you'd want to rob?
Why, that one right there. He pointed across the street and down about two buildings. That bank is part of the reason Pa's gone.
How did that bank have anything to do with your Pa dying?
Almost every day of the last days Pa was alive, that banker would come by here and tell Pa he needed to remember the loan was coming due, Toby explained. Now that's something I don't understand. Pa wasn't ever late with the payment his entire life. I figure the way that banker kept pestering him was what killed him, so that's the bank I would rob if I was a bank robber, which I ain't. Melvin looked at Toby, then twisted in the saddle and looked at the bank. It looked to be just an ordinary building, nothing fancy about it.
As owner of this here establishment, Melvin grinned, which he didn't do very often, are you willing to take a look at these animals and make me an offer?
Why, sure. Toby perked up a bit and continued. After all, that's what we do here at McGuire's Livery Stable. We buy, sell, and trade most everything.
Melvin stepped down from his mount and led him away from the other animals. Toby walked around the horse first, lifted his hooves, looked in his mouth, and glanced at the saddle with the new Winchester rifle in the boot.
Saddle and gear go with the horse? He asked, looking again at the rifle.
I figured on taking the guns to the gunsmith, if there is one, and see what I could get for him.
There's a gunsmith, but he's a cranky old man that'll try to beat you if you let him.
Ain't nobody gonna beat me and live to tell about it.
You saying what I think you're saying?
Asked Toby.
I'm just telling it like it is, Melvin said. You figure you can match or beat what the gunsmith can offer?
I'll say this, I'll be fair, but I have to remember what my pa always told me. Be fair, but remember this is a business, and it has to turn a profit or it won't be afloat for very long.
All right. Make me an offer, one that you consider fair.
I'll give 35 for the horse and all the gear. That includes a rifle.
And you figure that's fair?
I figure I can turn a small profit on the horse and saddle, the rifle, said Toby. I'll keep for myself.
How about the mule and the gear?
What kind of gear?
Prospector gear.
Where in the world did you come across that kind of stuff? Exclaimed Toby.
You don't need to concern yourself with where I got it. What matters is I got it, and it can be yours at a bargain if you're interested.
I think I recognize that mule. He looks a lot like old man Hankins' mule. How did you talk him out of letting you have it?
Are you interested in the mule or not?
Melvin is getting a little perturbed at Toby.
You know, I never did like a lot of questions. If you're not interested in making an offer, then I'll take my business someplace else.
Hold on. I didn't say I wasn't interested. It's just that I know old man Hankins, and I know for a fact the only way he'd part with his mule and gear is if he was dead.
I think I'll look for somebody else to buy the mule. I'll take your offer for the horse.
I didn't mean to upset you with all the questions. How much you figure the mule with everything is worth?
You sure you're interested?
I asked, didn't I?
Well, said Melvin, I figure the prospecting stuff is worth close to $50, and I'll throw in the mule.
I don't think I'll have much call for all the stuff, but I believe I can move the mule pretty fast. You interested in selling the mule and keeping the gear?
Now, how you figure I could carry all that stuff without a mule?
Melvin was getting a little tired of all this dickering.
Give me 35 and I'll get out of your hair.
You made yourself a deal. In fact, I'm going to sweeten the pot by giving you $75 for everything. How's that sound to you?
Show me the money and I'll tell you then how I feel.
Toby counted out $75 and handed it to Melvin, who promptly folded it and stuffed it in a sock, then stuck it in his pocket.
It's been a pleasure doing business with you, mister. I don't believe you said your name.
Melvin ignored him, turned away, and looked at the bank again.
He turned back and faced Toby.
"You really think that banker had a part in your pa dying?"
"As sure as the difference between day and night, I'm sure."
"Okay,"
said Melvin. He nodded to Toby and started leading his horse down the street, stopping in front of the bank. He tied the horse's reins to the hitching rail, stood for a minute, looking first in one direction, then t'other. He stepped up on the sidewalk, his boots making an echoing sound as he opened the door to the bank. He stepped quickly inside, taking in the surroundings. The lobby was empty. There was a man behind the cage and an elderly man seated at a desk off to the left of where he was standing. Melvin walked up to the teller, leaned in close, and spoke softly.
"If you want to stay alive, you'll put all the money in a sack and hand it to me."
The teller jerked himself upright and let out a yell.
"Hold up! Hold up!"
Melvin calmly took out his pistol, pointed it at the bank teller, pulled the hammer back, and pulled the trigger. The impact of the slug pushed the man back against the wall hard, causing him to bounce and fall face forward onto the floor. Melvin quickly turned the weapon toward the old man at the desk.
"You gonna be stupid like him, are you?"
"No, no, I'm gonna do exactly like you say. I got a wife, and she's expecting me home for supper. Please, point that gun someplace else,"
he begged with his hands together.
"Sure, you just do what you're told and everything is going to be all right."
The old man hobbled over to the cage and went behind the counter. He stepped over the dead teller and moved to the safe. He started turning the tumbler on the door. Melvin could hear him repeating numbers over and over.
"Come on, old man, I'm getting impatient."
Just then the front door burst open, and a man came rushing through with a gun in his hand. Melvin turned toward the man and pulled the trigger. The man looked at the red starting to stain his shirt, turned his face to look at Melvin. He started to say something, but fell to the floor without uttering a word. It was then that Melvin saw the badge on the dead man's vest. The old man was standing behind the cage.
"Son, you've done it now. It was bad enough that you killed Albert, but now you've killed a lawman. You'll be lucky if you get out of town alive."
"Old man," said Melvin, "you talk too much."
Melvin cocked his pistol, swinging it back to cover the old man.
"You said if I did what you wanted, you wouldn't shoot me. Here, I've got the safe open. You said you wouldn't shoot me."
He repeated himself.
"I lied,"
Melvin told the old man as he pulled the trigger. The slug caused the old man's body to fall back against the door of the safe, pushing it closed. With the last bit of life left in his body, the old man reached up and twirled the tumbler on the safe, causing it to lock. Melvin rushed back behind the counter, pushing the dead body away from the safe. Melvin seemed to have a lot of bad luck. Did it bother him? Not in the least. It was just another day in the life of Melvin Reasoner.
"Not only do I have to hone my stagecoach robbing skills," he stated matter-of-factly, "it looks like I need to add bank robbery to that list."
He gathered all the cash from the drawers, which wasn't but a few coins, and left the bank. On his way from behind the cashier's cage, he didn't notice the sock where he had put the money from Toby, caught on the corner of the cage, and jerked it out of his pocket. Without him knowing it, he was again without any money other than a couple of coins he had from the drawers from the bank. There was a crowd of people outside the bank.
"What happened?"
asked a man standing by Melvin's horse.
"There's been an accident in the bank. Maybe somebody should get the doctor. Better yet, maybe you should get the undertaker."
He mounted his horse, nodded his head at the man standing there, and headed out of town. As he passed the livery stable, he held up his hand, thumb up to indicate he had taken care of everything. Toby waved to him, shaking his head, wondering who this strange young man was. Melvin rode easy, as if he didn't have anything to worry about. He had just killed 3 more people, and the only feeling he had was an empty feeling. He wasn't concerned about someone chasing him. He just didn't care. He rode due south for a few hours, then started looking for a place to camp. As he rode along, he started humming that tune again without even thinking about it. When it dawned on him, he cursed and spit. When am I going to be able to forget all that stuff? What do I have to do to get it out of my head? He pushed his hat back and turned his face to the sky. I don't believe in you, so just leave me be. I don't want to have anything to do with you. You hear me? He lowered his head, settled his hat back, and spotted a small clearing ahead. He spurred the horse just a little. It turned out to be a pretty good place to set up camp. It wasn't as good as the one where he had spent a couple of days, but it would have to do. Even though there was no water, there was plenty of green grass for the horse and plenty of sticks and limbs for a fire. He still hadn't gotten a barrel for water, but he had kept the extra canteens from all the horses. He hobbled the horse in the middle of some grass. He hobbled him because he remembered the other horses ran off when he didn't hobble them. He couldn't afford to chance it. He sure didn't want to be stranded out here without a horse. He built a fire, made a half pot of coffee, fried up some bacon and beans. Afterwards, he bedded down for the night. Just like the majority of Melvin's nights, this night was filled with nothing. It seemed that Melvin did not dream. He had heard others talking about the dreams they had when they slept, but that was something Melvin couldn't understand because he didn't know what they were talking about. He woke the next morning feeling just as tired as he did when he laid down. He went through the same routine that he had the night before with the coffee, bacon, and beans. He leaned up against a tree, sipping the coffee. "What are you going to do today?" he asked himself out loud. He glanced up from where he was sitting and spotted a man and a horse heading toward him, coming from the direction of the town where he had just killed three people. He leaned over and picked up the shotgun where he had laid it before he went to sleep. He laid it across his lap, not bothering to get up. He pulled both hammers back on the double-barrel shotgun. As the man drew closer, Melvin saw a glint of silver from the sunlight on the man's chest. "Law, dog," said Melvin softly. "Should I go ahead and shoot him or wait and see what he wants?" The man stopped his horse about 5 or 6 feet away. "Howdy, stranger," the man said calmly. "That a double barrel you got there?" Melvin shifted the barrel just a bit and pulled both triggers. The pellets cut the man in half. The top half of his body went flying over the rump of the horse, while the lower half stayed in the saddle. The horse was so spooked that he started running directly toward Melvin. He barely got out of the way. As the horse passed by him, the man's lower half slid off the running horse and landed right on top of Melvin. Melvin never moved very fast, but that day he was faster than a speeding bullet. He pushed at the partial body, trying to get it off him. He finally got up and away, but found himself covered with blood. He looked up at the retreating horse, which was almost out of sight. "Don't reckon he's going to slow down till he gets to town," said Melvin, talking to himself. He pulled his bandana from around his neck, trying to wipe the blood off. Melvin wasn't one to scare easily, but this little incident scared him a lot. He continued wiping his hands to try and get the blood and gore off, but without any water it was a daunting task. He quickly mounted his horse and left the area in a hurry. He didn't realize until later that he had left his coffee pot, cup, skillet, and plate and fork. Melvin wasn't one of the luckiest people on earth. However, once his heart stopped racing, he took it all in stride. He finally reached the conclusion that it was just another day in the life of Melvin Reasoner. After approximately 2 hours of riding, Melvin spotted a town not too far ahead. "I can get supplies there, at least I hope I can. Maybe I'll try really hard not to hurt nobody. Just ride in, take care of business, and ride out." He rode straight toward the sign that read, "General Store," stopped, climbed off his horse, tied the reins to the hitching rail, and stepped inside. It took a moment for his eyes to adjust to the dimness of the room. When he could see, he saw a gray-headed elderly woman standing behind the counter.
"Good day to you, young man," she said. "Is there something I can help you with?"
"I'm needing a few things," he told her. "I'll just look around a bit, and then I'll settle up with you."
"I've got a couple of things to do in the back room," she told him. "If you need me, just call out, and I'll be right here."
Melvin gathered up the items he was missing and placed them on the counter. He reached in a jar of peppermint sticks and grabbed a couple of pieces, sticking both in his mouth. The lady returned from the back.
"I see you found some items. Is this going to be everything for you?"
"Yes, ma'am. I think that should do it." He reached into his back pocket for the sack that held his money, not knowing he had lost it at the bank. He searched all his pockets, then said to the lady, "Hang on just a minute. I need to check my horse." He rushed through the door and untied the burlap bags from the saddle horn. He dumped everything out on the ground and rummaged through it.
"Where's the box with the farmer's money in it?"
He stood up thinking and remembering the extra horses running off with the sacks tied to their saddles.
"Damn it! Looks like I'm completely broke again. I sure hate to do this, but I got to have them supplies in there."
He walked back in and said,
"Ma'am, I hate to tell you this, but I ain't got no money to pay for these here goods." "I don't know you, and besides, even if I did, I don't give no credit to nobody. I wouldn't be in business if I give credit." "Ma'am, you don't understand. I ain't asking for credit."
Melvin took his pistol from its holster, pulled the hammer back, raised and pointed it at the woman.
"No, please,"
she screamed.
"Take it. Just don't kill me."
Melvin pulled the trigger. The slug blasted through the thin woman's head, killing her instantly. He calmly shoved the pistol back in the holster. He started placing all the items into a bag when he felt something poke him in the back of his neck. He knew immediately what it was when he heard the metallic click of a pistol's hammer being pulled back.
"Hold on there," said Melvin. "This can all be explained."
"You can do your explaining to the judge," said the voice holding the gun as he removed the weapon from Melvin's holster. "Now march and don't try nothing, or you will have to explain to the judge in the sky."
Melvin walked across the street and down the wooden sidewalk with his hands held high in the air.
"Okay, this is it. Reach down with your left hand and open the door, and remember, this ain't my finger poking you in the back."
Melvin opened the door and stepped inside with the gun pressed firmly against his back.
"See those cells yonder? You pick the one closest to you and step inside. Don't turn around until I tell you. Understood?"
Melvin nodded and walked across the room and into a cell. Once he was inside, he heard the metal door slam shut and the lock sliding into place.
"Okay, you can relax now," said the voice.
Melvin turned around and was looking into the eyes of a man who wasn't much older than him.
"Are you the law here?"
Melvin asked.
"Yep, legal and proper, sworn in by the judge himself. Of course, it don't matter that he's my uncle," the young man said, bragging and puffing out his chest. "And just in case you might want to know, that was the judge's sister you killed, my aunt."
"I can explain all that," Melvin whined.
"I done told you, hold all your explaining for the judge. What you need to do now is sit there and think about what you've done."
The young sheriff could have said anything but that. It stirred up memories that he wanted to forget. Those are the same words his father used to say to him whenever he did something wrong.
"You sit there and think about what you've done wrong."
Something inside of Melvin that wasn't already broken broke right at that moment. His eyes seemed to change color as if he was possessed by a demon. The sheriff backed away from the cell, afraid to be close to whoever or whatever was behind those bars.
"You need to calm down before you hurt yourself,"
as Melvin began banging his head against the iron bars.
"Okay, go ahead and kill yourself. It'll save the town the cost of a trial."
He turned and left the room. Melvin finally tired himself out and sat down on the bunk. This reminded him so much of his younger days. He was wondering if this was going to be the end for him. Somehow he didn't seem to worry if it was the end, then so be it. He stretched out on the bunk and placed his hands behind his head. He was counting the cracks in the ceiling when he heard the front door of the jail open. He didn't bother to look up. He didn't really care who had come in. He did notice that the footsteps weren't as loud as those of the sheriff. His wondering got the better of him, and he sat up. There, standing in front of the bars, was the young girl whose family he had killed. What was her name again? Oh, yeah, Imogene. Imogene Cooper. Hi, Imogene. I knew I would see you again. It seems you ran away before we could get better acquainted. Did you come see me so we can do that?
Oh, yes, she said. I came in here so we can get better acquainted, all right. You know my name, but I don't know yours. Why don't you tell me your name?
I'm Melvin Reasoner, at your service, ma'am. He smiled.
Melvin Reasoner, she spelled it out. Is that correct?
That's it. Say, why are you writing it down?
So the undertaker will get it right for your tombstone.
There's just one little problem wrong here, Imogene.
What's that, Melvin?
I ain't dead yet.
No, not yet, but very soon.
She reached over and picked up a shotgun sitting just outside the door to the cells.
Recognize this shotgun, Melvin? This is Papa's shotgun that you killed him and Ma with. I think it's right that it should be the thing that takes your life, not some rope.
Melvin looked through the bars at little Imogene Cooper as she lifted the heavy shotgun to her small shoulder, pulled back both hammers, and said,
So long, Melvin Reasoner. May you burn in hell.
Melvin Reasoner died the same way as he lived by, the gun. The undertaker did spell his name correctly, thanks to Miss Imogene Cooper.
Gleaned from Ask.com. Myth. Everything you've seen in TV and movies about people getting shot with shotguns. Fact. In close quarters, buckshot and slugs do heavy damage, but people do not explode, fly backwards, and there is not always a huge window for them to fall through. Fact. A blast from a 12-gauge loaded with double-aught buck can almost cut you in half. Movie scene. At close range, a shotgun blast can rip chunks and body parts clean off. I have heard of an accident where, while horseback riding, a fellow accidentally shot a companion and nearly ripped him in half. Books by J.C. Hulsey. Angel Falls, Texas. Velvet Sky, Arizona. Angry Orchard, Colorado. Clearstone, Wyoming. Itching Tree, Idaho. Windy Butte, New Mexico. Devil's Dance, Dakota Territory. Redemption Road. Red Rose. Trudy. The Concho Kid. The Pistol Preacher. Shortland. Ugly Mugly. Gutshot. The Old Man. The Decision. The Greenhorn. The Waterhole. The Hangman. The Gunfight. This has been Melvin, Evil with a capital E. Written by J.C. Hulsey. Narrated by J. Scott Bennett. This audiobook uses many sound effects from freesound.org. For a complete list, see http://tinyurl.com/omxt8xu. Copyright June 11, 2015 by J.C. Hulsey. Production copyright 2015 by Outlaws Publishing.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.